Coming up next, it's hour number two of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. This hour, it's our pleasure to bring on Howard Bloom, American author and scientific thinker extraordinaire, someone we've had on the show a few times on various topics. And this week is a topic that Howard has been involved with as long as I can remember, and that's the exploration of space and what's going on in the space world. A little different from The God Problem, one of his other books, but probably related in many ways. So, Howard, welcome to the show.
Al, it's terrific to see you again.
Yeah.
And I actually can see you.
Yes. Oh, Mrs. Future.
Skype.
Oh, man. Yeah, I just noticed.
Wow. You swung the camera your way.
You mean this isn't just radio anymore?
That's not just radio.
So you can see Alan, and Google Glass can see you, or at least it can see your Skype icon.
Yeah, you'll see my every facial expression.
Oh, my God.
We're in trouble now.
You're Google Glassing me. I forgot that.
Yeah. What's fascinating that happened last month were these two major explosions that happened in the space industry, both from very, very different companies with different backgrounds. And I'm kind of curious. I was wondering why this happened in this way. And you wrote an article about this that got my attention. So I thought we'd bring you on the show and talk about this a little bit. Can you give us a little background as to, you know, how to think about this?
Well, first of all, on October 28th, we had the explosion of the Antares rocket on its way with a Cygnus capsule to resupply the International Space Station. It was a bit of a shock. It was more than a bit of a shock. That rocket comes from Orbital Sciences. So does the Cygnus vehicle, the cargo pod that it was carrying. 3 days later, on Friday of that week, Spaceship Two went down. And that's a Richard Branson plane. That's a Virgin Galactic plane. And my fear that there is something going on in the space community that somehow never makes the headlines and is totally diabolical. Our space program is being killed by a bunch of congressmen and senators who swear that they are the biggest space advocates in the world. And what do I mean by being killed? We last had access to space for American citizens on American vehicles in 2011. That's 4 years ago or 3 years
ago. At the end of the space shuttle,
Columbia,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we've had a space gap since then. Now, there are a bunch of senators and congressmen who are pushing an enormous pork project that really won't fly, but is sucking up all of the oxygen in the room. It's sucking up huge amounts of NASA's budget.
Now, the pork goes to the big companies like Lockheed Martin and Boeing.
Boeing and Northrop Grumman, but that's not really where the pork goes from a senator's and congressman's point of view. That pork goes into the pockets of these giant space military industrial complex companies, and then some of it comes back to the congressmen and senators in the way of campaign contributions.
Yeah, that's been going on for a while, right?
Right. The space launch system is not
designed. Hold on, Howard, just a second. We're very choppy. Can't hear you.
Howard, are you there? Yeah, I think what happens is we're talking fast, the bandwidth goes. Let me turn off my video so we get more bandwidth.
Okay.
All right. Coming right up.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, we want you to say that again. Either that or we'll start thinking the conspiracists are trying to take out our conversation.
Start that again. So we're talking about what's taking all the oxygen
out
of the room.
It's not really the big aerospace companies, but, and start from there.
It's not just the big aerospace companies. The way that it works is there's a $30 billion nipple in the mouth of the space military industrial complex companies. But some of that money comes back to the senators and congressmen who lobby on behalf of the space military industrial complex. It comes back in the way of campaign contributions. And Al, if you were to start running for office and I were your political advisor, the first thing I'd have to tell you is that from now on, you have to get used to the fact that you have to put 50 to 60% of every single workday into raising money, not into creating legislation. That's how vital money is in the political process these days. Yeah. So you've got money that's being, well, let's do a little history of this.
So whoever gives you the most money gets your attention.
And you work on that individual or corporation's behalf, no matter how much, say, you're representing your clients, your individual constituents. But there's another tricky little factor in here. The Space Military Industrial Complex, when it's setting up a program, tries to set up the manufacturing process in as many states as possible so it can capture the allegiance of as many senators and congressmen as possible.
Oh, I see. So you've spread it around so you get all the senators and from all the states. Ultimately, you'd want as many as possible, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So with the F-35 fighter program, there are jobs in 45 states. There are parts of the operation to produce that plane.
Really, for that one aircraft. Wow.
Yeah. 45 states. And the goal is obvious, to capture those congressmen and those senators. So I became aware of this in 2010. 2010, I was in China, and I had set up Buzz Aldrin with Dr. APJ Kalam, the 11th president of India, in order to get President Obama's attention for something Buzz had initially helped turn me on to, harvesting solar power in space and transmitting it down to Earth, something that Dr. Kalam, who's a rocket scientist, is very, very into.
Yeah, an infinite amount of energy possible all the time from such a source.
Exactly.
By the way, we have about 20 seconds before a break. Do you want to leave the audience with it?
And then we'll go back to this cabal in Congress that's killing our space program.
And hopefully what we can do about it. All right, this is the Dr. Future Show. We're on with Howard Bloom, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Howard Bloom on basically how to save the space program, from what I can see. So where are we at with this?
Well, let's go to the beginning of this particular project, the Space Launch System, the launch system that is killing our space program, that's guaranteeing us a space gap of at least 11 years and possibly much, much more. It was back during the days of the Bush Jr. administration. Mm-hmm. And George Bush, when he was president, had a propensity to come up with programs that sounded very good, but then to underfund them. His head of NASA, Michael Griffin, came up with a program to get us back on the moon and to take us to Mars. It was called the Constellation Program. There were only two problems with it. It looked exactly like the Apollo program. In other words, it advertised to the world and to us Americans, our best years are behind us in 1969 to 1972, and all we can hope to do is repeat them. So from an artistic point of view, it was a big mistake. But from a practical point of view, it was also a big mistake. It was too expensive for anybody ever to put it together. We would never have the budget to actually implement it. When Barack Obama came, by the way, Michael Griffin proudly called it Apollo on steroids, not realizing that he was shooting us in the foot. He was taking away our sense of a brilliant future ahead of us and telling us all we had was a past. I bawled him out for that at one point. Then Barack Obama came into office. And for the first 2 years that he was in office, we had no idea of what his space program was going to be. Then back to the event when I was in Chengdu in China talking about harvesting solar power in space, and I had put Dr. APJ Kalam together with Buzz Aldrin and in order to get Obama's attention. And I suddenly realized that Obama was going down to Florida to the Space Coast, the Kennedy Space Center, to make the speech in which he would lay out his space policy, and that if we could get him anywhere before an hour before his speech, we could influence what he said. But once he said it, it would be too late. So I wrote an email to Buzz and said, Buzz, you have 7 hours to get to the president. And 2 hours later, I got an email back that said, Howard, I'm on Air Force One. So the president, when he initially came into office, had gotten a legend in the space community, Norman Augustine. Augustine was the head of a major Augustine commission. He was the former head of Northrop Grumman, or was it Lockheed Martin? I forget which. I think it was Lockheed Martin. And he was also an undersecretary of defense. So Norman Augustine's Blue Ribbon panel sat down and examined this impossible program, the Constellation program, left over from the Bush administration, for 2 years. And they came to a simple conclusion. It was unsustainable. Now, what does that mean? It means that you might have enough money to continue the development of the rockets involved for 2 or 3 years. But then the cost of the program would balloon so massively that they would go way, way beyond NASA's budget and the program would have to be stopped. In other words, it was a program going nowhere. It was a bridge to nowhere.
So they really needed a new vision at that point, huh?
Yes, absolutely. So Barack Obama, in his speech in Florida, laid out a simple program. He was going to discontinue the Constellation program, and he was going to take $6 billion and give it to private industry. That is, he would pay private industry for getting Americans into space.
Is that where, like, Elon Musk comes in and scales composites?
Exactly. It was Elon Musk and Sierra Nevada and Orbital Sciences and a bunch of other companies that competed to get this $6 billion. Well, as soon as the congressmen and senators from the anti-space cabal, from the space military industrial complex cabal, saw this, they went crazy.
They must have not liked that at all.
No, not at all. And yeah. The space military industrial complex, remember, my field of interest is mass behavior, from the mass behavior of quarks to the mass behavior of human beings, particularly how that mass behavior manifests itself in the forces of history. So I went into something I knew nothing about, popular culture, and founded the biggest PR firm in the music industry.
Right.
And worked with Michael Jackson, Prince, Bob Marley, Bette Midler, AC/DC, Aerosmith, Kiss, Queen, Billy Joel, Billy Idol, etc.
Yeah.
So I know publicity.
Yes.
And I know how it works. I know the myth-making machinery. And I had never in my life seen anything like what happened when Barack Obama made his speech. The space military industrial complex lobbyists and PR people are so devastatingly effective that they convinced virtually everybody in the press that Barack Obama had just killed America's space program. Now, then they rolled out of the closet this fact that they'd never confessed before. Yeah. That America had a space gap. It could no longer get into space. Americans could no longer get into space on American vehicles. And they blamed that on guess who? Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And nobody in the press fact-checked them. Even my producer at Coast to Coast, you know, the show I've done 101 times, who usually really knows her stuff, was utterly bamboozled. And that's when Buzz used a phrase that I had never heard before to refer to the space military industrial complex people. The Darth Vaders of space.
Hilarious.
These people had no compunctions about lying like crazy, and somehow they knew that they would never be fact-checked at all.
Really?
So
they ran things. They basically were in charge. They were the David and Goliath story here. They would be the big Goliath, right?
They're really big Goliath. And so they managed to whittle that $6 billion down to something like $250 million a year.
Oh, man.
Which is change in NASA terms. Nonetheless.
And the rest goes to them.
Right. And Elon Musk was determined to move ahead whether he had government contracts or not. And he just kept moving ahead. Sierra Nevada, another one of the companies developing something that looks like a smaller version of the shuttle, they unfortunately are dependent on government contracts, and they have been withering on the vine, although they've been raising a lot of international business. Because the space military industrial complex is so good about lying, when the Antares rocket went down on Tuesday, October 28th, and when Spaceship Two went down on the following Friday, 3 days later, well, let's give you a little bit more background. A month before those two rockets went down, the guys in the space military industrial complex congressional cabal, those were Mike Kaufman, Cory Gardner, and Mo Brooks, put a letter together. And they said that SpaceX was a dangerously flawed company, that every single one of its launches was infected by what they called an epidemic of anomalies. And they listed all these anomalies, and they said, we want a full accounting from SpaceX of every single one of its launches, and we want a list of all of the anomalies. They were trying to make the case.
Yeah. They were trying to take them down, right? They were
trying to make the case that the only companies that can fly us safely to space are the companies of the space military industrial complex.
But of course.
And that any private company was taking your chances on a cowboy who was just as likely to shoot himself in the head as he was to get us into space. So they were busy making that case. And when those two vehicles went down, the Antares and the Spaceship Two, I was extremely concerned that they would try to use this to prove that private space is unsafe. After all, Orbital Sciences looks to an outsider with no background in this field like a private company.
But it really is the cabal, right? I mean, under the sheets.
And of course, Richard Branson looks like the ultimate outsider. But there's a basic fact here, and that is it was the space military industrial complex that crash those two rockets. It didn't crash them deliberately, but it was crashed under the aegis of these two companies, under the aegis that is supposed to make us safe. Orbital Sciences is not primarily a private company as we normally regard private companies. Mm. It's a private company in the same sense as Lockheed Martin or Northrop Grumman or Boeing. It is a company that depends almost entirely on space military industrial contracts. Mm. It's put up 50 missions for just one military agency. It builds rockets to test anti-ballistic missile systems. It builds the rockets that are supposed to be the incoming rockets that the anti-ballistic missile systems being tested are supposed to shoot down. It does all kinds of military work. Now, there's nothing wrong with doing military work. Some of the most innovative work in the history of civilization has been done for militaries. But there is something wrong, and the something wrong is this. When you are a space military industrial contractor, you are accustomed to working in a protected environment in which you can jack up your profits hugely because you have what are called cost-plus contracts.
And in the gravy train is pretty good there.
Yeah. So if it takes you $100 million to develop a project, you get your 10%, $110 million, automatically, no matter what happens. If you can jack the price up from $100 million to $150 million, well, you get $15 million in profits. You increase profits by 50%. So we end up with a lot of systems that do not work well and are vastly overpriced thanks to the space military industrial complex.
And the thing is that that's endemic, right? That's the way it has been for some time now. And these upstarts are sort of encroaching on their territory, if you will.
So, and they're challenging that problem.
Yeah, I know in Silicon Valley, one of the ways they do that is you buy these companies, upstarts, and then you quietly stop their programs that are interfering with your corporate agenda.
Right, which can be very dangerous to America. It's keeping us out of space.
Just about 30 seconds before CBS.
Orbital Sciences is a space military industrial complex company, and the company that Richard Branson was relying on to manufacture Spaceship Two is also a space military industrial complex
company. So effectively, they've been bought out already. And so they're going to quietly kill them is one subplot that could happen.
Well, it looks like they successfully shot themselves in the foot.
Yes, they were trying to prove that only they could put together safety in space. They've just proven that they are unsafe at any speed.
All right, well, let's continue the story after the news.
After the break with more Dr. Future Show and Howard.
Will they succeed? Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Howard Bloom on the recent spaceship explosions from the Antares Orbital Sciences Group and Spaceship Two with Richard Branson and Virgin Galactic. Now, if these two companies are actually owned by the big boys, the military-industrial complex, and they don't want to see these companies as competition, does that mean that in some way these explosions were some form of sabotage?
No, I don't believe they were sabotage at all. I don't think that anybody involved in this is sufficiently evil to want to bring something down.
Okay, well, that's good. So it's more typical
politics.
And
it's not actually that the companies have been bought out. Orbital Sciences is a space military industrial complex company, period. But then there's Richard Branson. Now, he hasn't been bought out. Richard Branson formed Virgin Galactic around a company called Scale Composites, put together by a guy named Bert Rutan.
Yeah, genius now, in his field.
Right. Oh, he's the most brilliant. Yeah, he's the most brilliant aeronautical designer of the last half of the 20th century. He's just amazing. And when it comes to putting together vehicles that raise your sense of hope for humanity, he's the master at it. However, Bert Rutan initially put together, the Scale Composites is his company, and he initially put together the vehicle, Spaceship One, that won the X Prize with $20 million from Paul Allen, the Microsoft billionaire.
Yeah, back in 04.
Right, but then he sold Scale Composites. Guess who he sold it to? He sold
Galactic.
It to to Northrop Grumman.
Oh, really?
Yes. So Virgin Galactic is buying its rocket or its spaceships from Scale Composites, which belongs to Northrop Grumman, which is one of the biggest companies in the space military industrial complex.
And when did that come down, Howard? When that
I'm not sure what year it happened.
A few years ago?
I suspect it's about 6 years ago or so.
Okay.
But one way or the other, this means that both of these spacecraft were manufactured by space military industrial complex companies. And the bottom line is that you can't trust space military industrial complex companies for safety.
These cost plus sciences,
huh. Right. Compare Orbital Sciences, a space military industrial complex company, with SpaceX, Elon Musk's company. Elon Musk has never lost a commercial payload. Yes, he has lost rockets. He's lost rockets in the testing phase. And he's brilliant at learning everything you possibly can from a catastrophe so that it never happens again. The Orbital Sciences, on the other hand, has had four losses of payloads. In other words, those losses have not been of rockets that are being tested.
Now, Orbital Sciences are big companies as well. Are they owned, partly owned by Lockheed Martin and Northrop?
No, it's the other way around. There's a company called ATK, which is a major manufacturer of solid state, I believe it is, engines. And when this rocket blew up, the Antares, Orbital Sciences had announced that it was going to take over ATK. If you follow the history of the space military industrial complex companies, they build themselves up to a non-competitive position by acquiring other companies. And Orbital Sciences is one of those acquirers. Plus, if you look beneath the headlines, when Elon Musk has so far launched five successful missions of his Dragon capsule to the International Space Station, four of them.
It's remarkable. He's been really well with them.
And four of them have carried cargo up to the International Space Station. And when you read the headlines, the Cygnus capsule from Orbital Sciences is compared, as if they are the same thing, to the Dragon capsule.
I've noticed
that. Actually, and it's a bit more expensive than Elon Musk's Dragon capsule. But there is a huge difference nobody ever talks about, because the space military industrial complex is very good at making things invisible.
Safety, maybe?
Elon Musk's capsule can go to the International Space Station, unload its cargo, and then take on used experiments, socks that need to be laundered, all kinds of stuff, and can bring them back to Earth, can splash them down in the ocean. And then, frankly, the capsule could be flown again, but NASA outlaws that.
And you're saying the other capsule can't do that? They can't,
can't
take stuff
do
back?
That. It goes up, but it can't come down. It burns up in the atmosphere, which means it's a one-way ticket rather than a two-way ticket.
It's non-reusable can.
So it's, and yet it's being treated as exactly the same thing by the press. Another one of those instances in which we're sold a flawed bill of goods.
Hey, our space capsule is recyclable by the atmosphere.
Yeah. So there are these problems. And the question is, and there's fear in the space community that there is a conspiracy afoot. You'll notice that there's something called the Commercial Crew Program and the Commercial Cargo Program. SpaceX right now is successfully delivering payloads to the International Space Station and bringing back extremely useful, valuable material from the International Space Station as a contractor on the Commercial Cargo Program. The Commercial Crew Program is to take humans into space. And the major competitors for this were Sierra Nevada, that has its Dream Chaser, the thing that looks like a smaller version of the shuttle, a space plane that you'll be able to land on a runway. There's Elon Musk, who has his Dragon capsule, which was designed from the very beginning to carry seven human beings comfortably to the International Space Station. And there's Boeing, which has, I believe, its CS-10, which I believe can only carry six humans to the International Space Station and is probably a lot more expensive. The Commercial Crew Program only made up its mind about which of these competitors to pick a month or so ago. And when it made up its mind, it decided on picking Boeing and picking SpaceX.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because they had chosen more than one. Usually it's just one, isn't it?
Yeah, we reported on that. And didn't Boeing get the lion's share and SpaceX got a sliver?
Yes, exactly. But there is a move afoot to reduce this program to only one supplier. Now, again, this is a movement from the congressional and senatorial cabal. If it were reduced, if the Commercial Crew Program were reduced to just one supplier, which supplier do you think it would be?
The one that got 90% of the money already?
Exactly.
For their campaigns.
The pig program.
Right, the pig program, exactly. The pork in space.
The big existing feeding troughs.
But Elon Musk, about 3 months ago, unveiled his manned Dragon capsule. Mm. He unveiled it in California at a press conference, and then he had it schlepped to Washington, and he showed it there, which is a very good idea because you have to influence this congressional and senatorial cabal somehow. Elon will be capable of getting Americans into space on an American vehicle, his vehicle, within 2 years, whether he gets funding from the government or not. If he doesn't get any funding from the government, it might push it back 3 years or something of the sort. Now, here we have this space gap, 11 years minimum, in which Americans will not have access to space on American vehicles. Elon Musk, one way or the other, is going to be the one who saves us from that space gap. Not the senators, not the congressmen, not any of the companies from the space military industrial complex, because they, frankly, will not develop a crewed capsule unless they have a contract.
So how's he going to do that? Increase the sales of the Teslas?
It isn't the sales of the Teslas. He has a full manifest, a full launch manifest of commercial satellites that he's supposed to put up.
So those, that's worth billions right there.
It's worth billions. And in addition to that, he has a small slice of the military constantly needs to put up satellites. And here's another little scandal. The military constantly needs to put up satellites. Who does it buy its launch services from? A company called United Launch Alliance. Who is United Launch Alliance? It's Boeing and Northrop Grumman. They're partnered in United Launch Alliance. Talk about competition. And it's elimination. It costs about $265 million per flight, per rocket flight, for the military to put these things up. But the worst part of this is that when they put flights up for our military sensitive top secret military cargoes, guess where we get the engines for those Atlas rockets that the United Launch Alliance sends up into space?
Russia?
We get them from the Russians.
Yes, I was thinking that.
The ones
was Russian,
that just blew up were Russian.
Yeah,
right?
Weren't they recycled Russian engines that blew up in the Antares?
They're recycled Russian engines. They're called the RL-180s. And with the Antares, guess what kind of rockets blew up? Orbital Sciences to develop its Antares rockets sounds American, right? Even though it's got a Greek name, a Greek mythology name. But it sounds like an American rocket. I got news for you. They have bought all of their engines. Yes, they have bought some American engines. They're old Peacekeeper missile engines. Now, remember the Peacekeeper program, Ronald Reagan, the 1980s? So these are 30 to 35-year-old engines. But what makes things worse is the other engines that they're using. The other engines they're using, they're buying from the Russians, and they are left over from Russia's moon program, which took place in the 1960s and 1970s.
Yeah, Russians
so these
aren't
rockets
even using
are
them.
Close. Yeah, they're close to 50 years old.
Wow.
One of the things that the space military industrial complex is not going to tell you is that to maximize their profits, they have not been developing new American engines. They have not a single one of them has developed a new American engine in years and years and years.
So it's easier to buy the ones from the old ones that already exist and recycle them, I guess. Or
from the Russians.
Yeah, interesting.
Right. So we are pouring approximately $4 billion. Let me repeat that. That's billion with a B, $4 billion. Into Russia's space program while the senatorial and congressional cabal is trying to starve people like Elon Musk, who has actually developed American-made, American-designed engines that can outdo any of the other engines around because they're manufactured with brand new technology.
We got to go to a break, but let's talk about what we can do about this after the break, okay, Howard?
Okay.
All right. We'll see you in a few minutes.
All right, with our guest Howard Bloom here on the Dr. Future Show on KSEO. And we may have a little time for questions after the break at 479-1080. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Howard Bloom on the space program and Elon Musk, and we're at the point in the show where really what can we do to help ensure a space future we can all be proud of and be happy that it exists. And I gather from what you're saying is that Elon Musk's our best bet at this point. Howard, is that accurate?
He's a one-man space program. He single-handedly is what NASA should be. For example, we have no Mars program. Even though the people who talk about the Space Launch System and why we need it keep talking about getting to Mars, the fact is that our chief analyst, John Strickland, from the Space Development Steering Committee, the group that I run, tracked down NASA's only existing Mars architecture, analyzed it thoroughly, and found that it's undoable. It's completely undoable. We have no Mars program. Elon does have a Mars program. And he's about to get Americans into space on American vehicles for the first time since 2011. So what can you do? First of all, you can go to Kurzweil AI and look up my article, Who Blew Up the Rocket?
It's also on our links page at drfutureshow.com.
Oh, good. Terrific. And it'll give you a lot of the information that we've got now. Second, if you're in the habit, or even if you're not in the habit of writing your congressmen and senators, simply write them and say, please make sure SpaceX stays in the commercial crew program. Let me repeat that key phrase, commercial crew program, or say anything supporting SpaceX and the necessity of keeping it within our space program, of making sure the government buys launch services from it. United Launch Alliance, the company I was talking about with the overpriced rockets made with Russian engines that launches all of our military payloads, United Launch Alliance just concluded a deal with the Air Force or the military to provide 35 launches in the future. And Elon Musk took the Air Force to court because he wants this deal open for competition, because he can bring in the same services at a much, much lower cost and with no Russian rocket engines whatsoever.
Blowing up on the launch pad.
Yeah, so Elon Musk is our greatest hope, and anything you can write to your congressmen and senators saying, please buy launch services from Elon Musk, would be very, very helpful.
So make sure he gets some of the government contracts.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so, we have one text coming in of somebody who's wondering if the space industrial complex is obtaining strategic information by spying on SpaceX. And
they have done more than that.
Yeah.
Through their senatorial and congressional puppets, they have asked that Elon Musk reveal all of his information to them, all of it, because they say he's working on government contracts. And shouldn't he be subject to oversight from congressmen and senators? Well, that information is not really for congressmen and senators.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It seems like Elon's working from a more of an evolutionary game plan than the space industrial
company. Well, we know Elon Musk, and we know his story because I'm a huge fan of his. And from the time he was a kid, he has pretty much organized himself to retire on Mars. He wants to get to Mars and build a space colony. That's
absolutely
who he is. That's what's driving him. So he's being very efficient. And Howard, I wanted to just give you this idea in case you haven't already heard it. I really would love to visit a space colony on the floor of the ocean here on the planet. You know, like if Bigelow were to open up the first space hotel on the floor of the ocean, then I think we would really revitalize the space tourism industry because, you know, you could test it out here and maybe even have a virtual connection, you know, where you can talk to people live.
One little key to space tourism, humans go someplace to see the sights, right?
Sure.
To sightsee. And what sites do they always go to? Do they go to the deserts of Egypt to see the desert? No, they go to see the pyramids and the Sphinx.
Yeah.
They go to see great human achievements. This means it's unfortunate that we already allowed Mir to disappear because that was one of the first great acts of architectural audacity in space. It's unfortunate that Space Hab or Space Lab or whatever it's called is not still up there. But we must keep the International Space Station in space, even when it goes past its use date. Why? Because it's a site people can go and see.
Sure.
If you put up a Bigelow Space Hotel and there's nothing to see, it's not going to be a big draw. But if you accumulate the human buildings, these things that are bigger than the pyramids in their audacity and their strangeness, the International Space Station, if you accumulate these things and you put them in more or less one location, it's the Las Vegas trick. The Space Frontier Foundation through its 2008 conference in Las Vegas. And they asked me to come out and speak several times, which I did. And I suddenly realized something. If you put up just one building with roulette wheels and slot machines in the middle of a desert that kills you, I mean, that desert, you don't want to run out of fuel in the middle of that desert or have
right.
a problem with your pistons or something, because
no.
you're dead within 2 hours.
Yeah.
So you put up one hotel out there, it is not a draw. Nobody's going to come just to gamble. Put up 10 buildings there. Oh, it begins to be a little bit of a draw. But put up 100 different businesses all competing with each other to be the greatest fantasy land you've ever seen in your life. And now you have a draw. We need to reach this explosion point.
Yeah. I think I see it. Bigelow would understand this. Right.
Bigelow.
So he and Musk should get together and talk about the Las Vegas of low Earth orbit so we can have some tourist trips.
Exactly. Exactly.
Whatever, the hotels.
So we have something to go up there for and that only a very few people can afford. So it's a real status symbol. So all your other super rich friends will envy you because you've done something that they've never done.
Right. And something really fun that they've never done.
Well, I'm kind of waiting for the cruise liners that are going to go, you know, to the edges of the solar system so you can get on a cruise out to Saturn and come back.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that would be very neat. That would be extremely neat. But those are long journeys, 3-year journeys, and the radiation hazard is intense. So Al's idea of a Las Vegas in low Earth orbit is a little bit more of a near-term practicality.
Yes, I think it's practical.
Point.
We can sell it to the Congress.
Right, exactly.
By the way, what did you think of Interstellar, Howard?
I was stunned. I've never seen IMAX before. I went to see it in an IMAX theater. Mm-hmm. There's a videographer who follows me around recording my life. Mm-hmm. And the two of us went together. And there were moments in that film where, because the human drama was so intense and the suspense became so intense, my whole body sobbed. I've never had that experience in my life before. Never, ever. And when it was over, I looked over, the lights went up, and I looked over at the 6-foot 2-inch videographer, and he was sitting there like the Cardiff Giant. He was sitting there as if he were made out of stone.
Wow.
And I asked him how he felt, but you didn't have to ask him. It was in his body language. All he could say was speechless. So I think it's one of the finest pieces of art of any kind I've ever seen in my life.
And do you think Anne Hathaway is going to restart the human race on the other side of the interstellar vortex?
Once the hero gets there, McConaughey gets there.
Okay, you don't think she's going to just
be doing
it with a stash of genetic materials in her freezer or anything?
Yes.
Yeah.
Second
family. I was stunned, and I knew the. I met Linda Opes, the woman who put together the film with Kip Thorne.
Uh-huh.
Them put it together, and initially they took it to Steven Spielberg, and he tried to develop it for 4 years and he got nowhere, so they took it out of his hands and they gave it to John Nolan, Christopher Nolan's brother, and he'd managed to develop it, and he said, why don't you involve my brother Chris? And the film began to come together. Well, I'd never seen a promotional campaign like the promotional campaign that Linda and her team put together for this movie. I was stunned before I ever saw the movie. And then when I saw the movie, again, I don't know if it comes across this way if you're not watching IMAX and if you don't have that incredible IMAX sound system. It was so compelling, and it was so economical in its use of special effects. It did not overindulge in the special effects. It used them very briefly.
That's true, yeah.
Kept the human story going. And the human story, to me, was utterly more than engaging. It engaged my muscles, my bones, my viscera, my tear glands, all of me.
The father-daughter dynamic through time.
Yeah, that father-daughter dynamic of his leaving her and how it hurt her. And look, they deliberately made a film that referenced 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
And they took a lot of things that were mysterious in 2001, A Space Odyssey, and they gave you little hints of answers. And in doing so, they did it far more economically than Stanley Kubrick did it. And with a plot, which Stanley Kubrick's movie almost didn't have. Stanley
Kubrick. They're coming out with a 2000 and, what is it?
56 or something? The next Arthur C. Clarke story, the final chapter in 2000.
The final chapter, 2030 maybe? Something like that?
The idea that the wormhole and the 2001 the journey were connected. I got very strongly on this. I could see what you're saying there. And it does take it further that it was a plot of the aliens to show us where other worlds worth inhabiting could be.
And they answer the question of who are these aliens, which was left in your mind after 2001, A Space Odyssey. The aliens are us.
Yeah.
Are us.
So, bringing Matthew McConaughey back with his daughter, through the bookshelf and through gravity was a fabulous idea. It was just terrific. But the film remained sufficiently mysterious that it didn't demystify everything. But it was the human story. The big question I had was, can you do a science fiction film using this variety of special effects in which the human story predominates, because that's what makes a movie? And the human story gripped me so profoundly, it was ridiculous.
Wow. Well, do you have a daughter yourself?
No, I do. I have a stepdaughter that I've raised, but it wasn't just that. It's, you know, Jaak Panksepp, who's a friend of mine. Jaak Panksepp is the leading researcher on emotions in the brain, affective neuroscience, it's called.
Yeah.
And he's discovered there's a whole set of mechanisms in the brain that make you hurt diabolically when a bonded relationship is broken.
Yeah, I hear you. That's amazing. I'm glad they brought that element in. By the way, we at the end of the show, we got to go. So thanks, Howard, for being on the show.
Enormous pleasure. I enjoy it tremendously.
We love having you. So you have a good holiday season, and we'll chat with you soon.
Okay, talk to you in 2015.
All right. Take care.
This is KSUO Santa Cruz.